Good morning, everyone. Is it a good morning? That's for me to know and for you to find out. Let's see how the day unfolds. Okay, so before we begin then, let us all take a moment to pay homage to the most magnificent one, the fully awakened one, the supremely enlightened one, he whose compassion is boundless and he whose mercy is infinite. As we do so, let us also remind ourselves that we take an oath, a pledge, to liberate ourselves from suffering. And as we do so, let us also take this moment to observe the precepts and make a resolve that may, through the talk that we are about to listen to this morning, we be able to progress on our path to our salvation and towards the ultimate bliss of Nibbana. So to begin, let us bring our palms together in veneration of the Supremely Enlightened One, the Supreme Buddha, and chant the Namaskar.
Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa.
Those last two words, you would have said it 100 if not 1,000 times by now, every time you observe the precepts. Appamadena sampadete. Did you know, in fact, that these are the last words uttered by every Buddha? The last words. These are his final words. Every Buddha, when they pass away, this is the last message to mankind. Appamadena sampadete. This is what your teacher advised you do in the last moment, in his last moments with us. It's his final will, if you like, his last will, his last wish. When you're by your father or your mother or perhaps a loved one, if you've ever been in that situation where you were in their last moments with them, perhaps you held their hand and then they uttered their last words. Perhaps they said, "This is what I wish for you. This is what I want from you." Our Father, and by our Father I mean we as mankind, we as human beings, we as sentient beings in the 10,000 world systems. Because a Buddha is not just a Buddha for this human world. He is the Buddha in 10,000 world systems. More on that later. But our Father, when he passed away, this was his last will, his wish for all of us. Appamadena sampadete. Be heedful. Have a sense of urgency. Don't waste your precious life. See, for a Buddha to be uttering something, it's got to have some significance, right? That was not Einstein. He was the Buddha. The wisest man that has ever roam the face of the earth. The sagacious one, the infinitely merciful one, this is the Buddha. And what he wanted for us was to be heedful, because there is no substitute for heedfulness. Your presence here is you doing what you can to fulfill his ask of you. This may be just one day, or maybe one half of the day of a 7-day long week. Perhaps that is all the time that you get to be here. By here, I don't mean under this roof. I mean in the sasana, to be in the vicinity of the Noble Triple Gem, to be with his teaching, to be with him. Yo dhammam passati, so mam passati. If you wish to see me, you have to see the Dhamma. This is his teaching. So when you are with the Dhamma, you are with him. There is no substitute for heedfulness. As we make this journey and we take a step forward every day, every week, ladies and gentlemen, I want you to make sure that you are doing everything you can. Your everything may not be my everything, and that's fine. The most that you can do is probably going to be different for each and every one of you, and that's fine. Perhaps for some it'll just be a visit, one full moon poya day every month to the temple. If that is the best that they can do, fair enough. But if they can do 2 days and they only do one, then they're not doing the best that they can do. You know, oftentimes I think about this to myself. We spend a great deal of time trying to understand ourselves. You are all someone. You're somebody in society. You'll have a title next to your name. You may be the director of a company. Perhaps you're a sportsman. Perhaps you're a dancer. Maybe an artist. Maybe an actor. Perhaps you're a teacher. A doctor. A principal of a school. Whoever you are, you spend quite a bit of time in your life, the fruitful years of your life, exploring what this entails, don't you? See, Monday to Friday, what do? You know, a typical person, Monday to Friday, you spend time exploring the title that goes after your name. Am I right? And some people, perhaps even the weekend, if you have to work weekends as well. When we were students, when we were young students, we spent the most of our life, the majority of our life, exploring what that entailed, didn't we? 13 long years of our lives, we were at school. And if you started learning in Montessori or nursery, then add a few more years to that as well. But then after your higher education or your further education, you go on to university, most of you must have, and you go on to other studies, right? So you explore what being a student is like, because you consider yourself to be a student. At some point, you qualify. You become a professional. Whatever your profession is, you spend quite a bit of time of your life exploring what that entails, don't you? Some of you might have gone on to do maybe chartered examinations and getting such qualifications. Maybe you want to get to the pinnacle of your profession. Go as far as you can. There may be those among you who have qualified as PhD holders in your profession. Professors, maybe, some of you. See, a large portion of your life you expend exploring this title that comes after your name. Now that is just the working aspect, the professional aspect. There are other titles that society has given you. Let's take another. You are a mother. How much of your life have you spent exploring, finding out, doing all the things a mother must do? Far more years than you can care to count, I'm sure. That's how my hairs went gray, Swami Mohan said. What do you expect? How many years of your life have you expended figuring out, exploring, trying to understand what being a father is like? Because the moment that that responsibility landed on your shoulders, then from there on, you had no choice but to commit a large portion of your life to finding out, to exploring what that's about. If perhaps you were, you know, some leader in your community, maybe you are the Grama Sevaka, perhaps a political leader, perhaps you are the leader of a society, a club. Maybe you are the president of the Interact Club or the Rotaract Club. Maybe you are the secretary of the Lions Club. You spend quite a bit of your life, many years perhaps, if not many tens of years, maybe decades, exploring what that is about, trying to do the best you can to fulfill your responsibilities in each and every one of those walks, each and every one of those roles that you had to play in your life. Am I along the right lines here? Yes. This is why people say you are successful. Yeah? So, would you agree then if I were to say that you are a successful professional? I think you'll have to agree. You are a successful professional. Whatever your profession is, you're successful in that. Are you a successful mother? Mothers in the house, I think you can agree. Yes, we are, Swami. I am a successful mother, you might say. A successful father? What about a successful member of the family? Yeah, I've always been very loyal to my family. I've always been there for my family. When my brother needed me, when my sister needed me, when there were problems in the family, I was the one who was always there, uniting the family, keeping the family together. I was the one who was always there for my family. So, I'm a good family man. So you expended quite a bit of your life, you invested quite a bit of your life in being a good family member. Perhaps when the elections are around, you go and cast your vote because you want to be a good citizen. Make your vote count. Make your opinions known. Perhaps you're active in sometimes political circles, because you feel that that is your responsibility to make a difference in society. You want to make a change, you want to do good by innocent people, by people whose voice aren't heard, so you want to speak on their behalf. Perhaps there are activists around in the room here. Maybe environmentalists. Too early on a Sunday morning for long words. Perhaps you're one of them. You want to speak on behalf of the environment. Maybe Greenpeace is your thing. Maybe fighting for human rights is your thing. Maybe equal rights for all. Heterosexuals and homosexuals, they should all have the same rights. Perhaps that is your thing. You want equal rights for everyone. And whatever your cause might be, perhaps you're fighting for poverty. You want to raise our country, our nation, our people from poverty. Maybe education for children is your thing. Children should have the right to education, and I stand up for that. Maybe to stop domestic abuse. Maybe that's your thing. Whatever your cause is, ladies and gentlemen, I think you'll agree with me here, Whatever that cause is, whatever that calling is from above that you feel that you have to respond to, you commit, you dedicate, you invest a large portion of your life, your time to these causes because you want to make an impact during your stay here. In each of these instances, you fully abide by the Buddha's last words. Appamadena sampadeta. Don't you? You're heedful. You go as far as is required. You make every move that it takes. You run around, you do the errands. You make ends meet. You sign the documents, you make the negotiations. You speak on behalf of other people. You stand up on the stage, take a microphone and try to convince an audience. Maybe you motivate people. That's what you do because that's your thing. Appamadena sampadeta. You're heedful. In everything, but. But one. That's the difference between you and I. I respect you all for what you do. To be fair, if you didn't do what you did today, I probably wouldn't be able to do what I do today. Someone drove me here. I don't drive. Someone built this hall so that I can just walk in and do the talk. Someone set the microphone up so I could just come and speak. Someone makes the economy work. Someone. Someone sets the laws down. Someone catches the bad guys and puts them in prison and tries to set them right so I don't have to do that. Someone looks after the young children. Someone looks after the elderly. Someone paves the roads. Someone looks after the street lighting, so I don't have to do that. Someone makes the banks work, so I don't have to do that. So I'm grateful. I am grateful. I really am. And that is why I'm here. Because I'm grateful. I'm here to remind you that where everything else is concerned, appamadena sampadeta, yes, all over. But there is one thing that perhaps you are not heedful enough about. And that is your own salvation. I appeal to you to do the most and the best that you can for your own salvation. How much time do you set aside for that? When's the right time to start on that journey? If you walk into a typical temple, I think our monastery is a little bit different. Because if you come to our monastery, there are a lot of young people. Because we try to talk to young people. Young people, you're all young people. What do I mean by young people? Young people is not grey haired. It's not that. That's not how you measure young. Young people are people who can still understand what I say. Young people are people who can still hear what I say. And they can stay awake throughout a talk. Young people. Meaning people in whose lives I have the potential to make a change as the Mahasangha. But in a typical temple, on a Poya day, if you go to the temple, what do you see normally? What is the place full of? Achyammas. And even then, not the Siyas, still only the Achyammas. It is probably what your children have planned for you when you're older. Because that's the time to start thinking about your salvation, isn't it? When you're old and feeble and can't do anything for yourself. That's the time to start thinking about yourself, right? I'm being sarcastic. When is it too young to start thinking about your salvation? 15, is that too young? That's too young, isn't it? I mean, at 15, that's far too young. What should you be focusing on when you're 15? Do you remember? Education. Yeah? What else? Relationships and forming and building new relationships. Making your place in the world. So that other people know who you are and you know who other people are, forming those relationships, forming those connections, becoming someone. When you're 15, that's what you got to do, right? And keeping yourself fit. As I was walking or driven in, I saw our young children out there in the playground. Perhaps that is what prompted me to say this. I don't know. I really don't come in with an agenda. I come and sit down, look, open my eyes, and things just start to flow. They're probably 15. That's why they're not here. Yes, they have to do sport, of course. You've got to keep yourself fit, right? Burn away the calories. Keep yourself fit, right? Keep the blood vessels pumping, you know, the heart pumping, and, you know, strong, with vitality and energy. You need all that. Yeah, I agree. Appamadena sampadeta. Certainly. But the Buddha's appamadena sampadeta, people click after the age of 65, 70. When you're more trouble home than you're out. Then your children and everyone else at home, they're like, "We've got to go to work now. Hello. Can we drop you off at the temple?" Can you try and be there and not cause any mischief? And we'll come and collect you in the evening. And if it's a poor day, then particularly so, because everyone else is at home, right? So it's fun and games. You know, the young people are at home, so having the old granddad at home is just a menace. Yeah. He just spoils the party. When the nicely dressed, the good-looking people start coming in through the door, right? And then dear old Achi Amma, who can't even keep herself upright, picks up her walking stick or her Zimmer frame and starts walking into the living room. "Achi, not now." "Get yourself into the bedroom." "Amma, must we keep your mother here?" So, a boy a day, you know, it's a holiday, it's a bank holiday for everyone, so everyone's at home, the friends come around, right? The only place that is close is a tavern, so if you know that, then you just have to make sure that you go there the previous day. Yeah? The night before a boy a day is when they have the busiest, the most, they earn their most money, right? The highest turnover. On a day, one day is the day before Poya day, especially if it's Vesak. I've got no qualms against any of those things, but what I'm saying is, just look at where you are heading, ladies and gentlemen. I want you to think about yourselves every Sunday morning. Just forget everything else for a moment. When you're here, just be here. As you're walking through these doors, perhaps you take off your footwear. I want you to take off a few other things as well. As you take off your footwear, where do you leave them? Out here. All right. So as you take off your footwear, may that be symbolic for you from here on. As you walk in through these doors, take off a few other things. Take off the fact that you are a teacher. And stop thinking for just a couple of hours about the assignments that you have to mark before Monday. And the homework that you have to tick off before you go to school the following day. Forget for a moment, just leave outside, because it's fine, when you go out, it'll all be there, don't you worry. No one's going to come and take them away. They may take your footwear, but they're not going to take your worries away, don't you worry about that. It'll all be just where you left them. The business deal that you have to sign and negotiate next week, leave that out there for a moment. Your children and their schooling and their education and how you're going to have to find the means and the resources to send them off to Canada or to Australia or to the UK to complete their higher education, leave that out there for a second. Just for a couple of hours on a Sunday morning. When you walk in here naked. Metaphorically. Just bring yourself into this room. And nothing else. If you're a businessman, leave it outside. Because if you walk in here with your business on your head, I can't help you. Bring your child, just hold them by their hand, but let go of them mentally. Walk them in with you, sit them down next to you and ask them, Putta, from now on, you are on your own. Listen to Swami Mohan say and try and make sense of what he has to say. But don't be bothering on me. Not for the next 2 hours. As you walk in through these doors, leave your patience for a moment. Just for a couple of hours. Perhaps you are the best consultant surgeon out there. Maybe you are the best heart surgeon out there. And without you, 300 patients are going to die the next week if you don't do your operations, your surgeries. Fine. Well, you're not going to be doing any surgeries for the next 2 hours while you're here. Because you have another kind of surgery that you need to be doing. So, as you walk in through these doors, leave them behind. When you walk out, they'll be there for you, don't you worry. Because all those things, you engage in appamadena sampadeta, and if you're not mindful, even when you're here, if you're not mindful, in a few moments after I have started to speak, you will wander away into your usual abode. Perhaps that is home, perhaps that is your workplace. And at the monastery, we encourage and always request that people, when they walk into the Dhamma hall, to put their phones on mute, not vibrate. Because when it vibrates, what happens? You're still there. That's just a silent way, silent reminder, isn't it? Now, I know that not everyone can do that, because perhaps you're on call. Maybe you have to, you know, the moment you're summoned, within half an hour, you have to be somewhere. So I understand that this is not practical for everybody. But there will be those here to whom that is entirely possible. So if you have to keep your phones on you, maybe, and this is just a suggestion, not on vibrate, silent. The world will go on with or without you. When you die, what do you think is going to happen? Let's plan that a lovely conversation for a Sunday morning, isn't it? So right, let's make our funeral plans then. Okay? So, now you're dead. At the count of three. One, two, three. Drop dead. If you died here, the first thing we're going to probably have to do is find out if you have any kith and kin here. If not, try and locate a telephone number, right? And maybe ring someone Or perhaps ask the ambulance to come round. Because maybe if you're not sure, you're completely dead. And either rush you to the emergency, or if you're sure that, you know, that's it, kaput, done, no more saving you, right? Then we'll ring your family and say, sorry, these sermons have such an effect on people. So unfortunately, it happened. Right? So what's going to happen next? Now I want you to plan for it. What do you think is going to happen next? We're going to have to ring a few people, won't we? Your closest family members. So we're going to have to ring them and say, hello, is this Mr. Siripala's family? Yes, well, I'm really sorry to say this, but I'm ringing from the college, and Mr. Siripala came in here for a sermon, and Swami Nuanse was saying something. I think it just shocked him, and then he just dropped dead. So I'm really sorry to be the conveyor of this news to you, but I'm sorry to say your father is dead. So there'll be a brief moment of silence, and then the floodgates will open. Yeah? So this is, now we are now about 20 minutes into your death. I'm going to chart your timeline. See where the impact is, alright? So 20 minutes into your death, this is what's just happened. And then within about half an hour to an hour, people will be here to come and collect their late beloved. So if the funeral parlor come in, then they'll get your body onto the trolley, right? And maybe they might wrap you up. Perhaps they might think, you know, this is a sudden death, so we need to get you to the coroner and see what's going wrong, right? Somehow they'll wheel you out of this place. What are the rest of us going to do? Here's a better question. What do you want the rest of us to do? Say we've only just started the talk. Okay? So, 20 minutes into the talk, this has happened. So now we are about half an hour into the talk. So obviously, don't worry, I'll stop the talk. If you drop dead, as a mark of respect, I will stop the talk. Right? And unfortunately, there are no flags. So we can't put them on half mast or anything like that, but I'll stop the talk. And for half an hour now, you know, we have focused our attention on the fact that you have just passed away. We still have another an hour and a half to go. What do you want us to do in that time? Do you want us all to pack up and go, or what do you want us to do? Have a think. No, you are very special. Someone very special has just passed away. A VIP has just passed away. Don't forget, when you are done, you are only a VIP in your own world. Nowhere else are you one. Because to take your place, someone else is already lined up. So what do you want us to do? Do you want us all to sit in a circle, maybe with you in the middle, right, and just hold our hands and say a prayer? Maybe, I don't know, what do you want us to do? Maybe chant some pirit? Maybe do the water ritual? Yathavari vahapuram paripuranti sagara. Maybe transfer some merits? I don't know, what do you want us to do? I want you to imagine this. I really want you to imagine this. What would happen in the 2-3 hours that would follow a sudden death on your part? Now you've been taken home, if that's home, or perhaps to the funeral directors, or maybe to the hospital. One of these three places you're going to have to be taken to, right? What do you want us to do? I'll do whatever you want us to do. What do you want us to do? Let's stop the sermon and all go home, or let's carry on? If you want us to stop the sermon, just put your hand up for a second. So you all want unanimously us to carry on with this talk. Yeah? But someone very important just died. Shouldn't we stop? No? But they're very important. Come on. You've got to be a little bit more sensitive than that. The bee's knees has just passed away. What do you want us to do? Carry on with the talk? Did you hear that? Did you all hear that? See what everyone else thinks about you? They want us to carry on with the talk even after you're dead. Did you all hear that? But you got family with you. What do you want them to do? You've come here with family. What do you want them to do? You want them to come home with you, right? Yeah? Okay. So let's make a note of that. Family, if you're here as family, you're expected to go home. Okay? So you're expected to miss your Sunday morning service. Right? You're expected to miss your Sunday morning. Appamadena sampadeta, in the Buddha's intention, you're expected to fulfill your duty as the remaining partner or the remaining child of the dead parent or the dead spouse. Okay? So you're expected to go home. Right? So you're home, we are carrying on with the sermon. When we get home, what are you going to talk about? Like you walk back home, right, after the sermon. Now this is not the family of the dead person, everybody else. As you head back home, you know, you're greeted by your family, what are you going to say? You know, something happened today in the sermon. This man, he was listening to the Swaminarayan speak, and Swaminarayan started talking about the four great hells and so on. And this man just dropped dead. Sin, no? We never expected it. He didn't even wait for the sandwiches. 20 minutes into the talk, this man, that's it, gone. What a surprise, isn't it? Life. Huh? Unexpected, this life. In the meantime, the dead body has already started to rot. So what's going to happen? Okay, now it's the evening. Maybe 8 p.m. 8 o'clock at night. Right, so now the family and the extended family has been informed. Right, a few calls have gone out. You know, so to say, uncle passed away, brothers passed away. Right, so a few sobs here and there. You know, people are mourning your death. What's happened to you, by the way? You're just rotting away. Right? But the you that was in it is no more. Right, so you don't know what the heck's going on, really. Right? And if you believe in an afterlife, now you're already trying to look for the next place to reincarnate, but chances are, in the moment of your death, you are reminded of a deed that you might have done throughout your living life, and that deed was the deed with which you passed away. So that brings you your rebirth, perhaps as a Gandhabha, awaiting a human mother's womb to take rebirth again, or if you've done something terrible and that is what you were reminded of, then, sorry to say, it's damnation for a long time. But, you know, let's be happy because there are still people who are concerned about you. Your time is gone, no more sermons for you, no more preachings for you, no more Four Noble Truths for you, your time is gone. But those who are left behind, they're still mourning about your death. You know, now it's about 24 hours now since you passed away, and people are already starting to talk about your last will. Why are you sneering at me like that? What, it doesn't take 24 hours? The children, they start coming. If there's a child up somewhere in Canada, one in Australia, one in France, they all start, they get news, and now they're coming down to Sri Lanka with their spouses. So the children want to be there by, you know, be there and give mark their respects to the dead parent, whereas their spouses, I can't say all of them, right? Typically, their spouses are beginning to start conversations about, you know, that coconut land he had, right? You know those 20 acres of tea that he had? I wonder what he did with that. What about the rubber estate? What's going to happen with the house now? You're the youngest in the family. You're the Badapissa. You deserve it. Maybe when we go to the funeral, you should start, you know, just talk to the mother. Talk to your mother and just ask her, you know, what was Tati's last will, Amma? You know, ask her, okay? Don't forget. I'll remind you, don't worry, in case you forget. What's happening to you right now? Rotting away. You're rotting away. So this is what? Maybe 2 days now into your death. Don't worry, we are starting to make plans for the Hadda Uzadana. Don't worry. So by the third or the fourth day, they have started making plans for the 7-day almsgiving. Right? So someone's gone to the temple and informed the monk. Swami Nansa, my father passed away. Are you going to come and do your duty? Of course, you are a good devotee to the monastery, to the temple. You donated this pagoda. Of course, we will come and do that for you. You gave this, you donated this hall, so of course we are going to come and do it for you. Your father was a very good supporter of the temple, so of course we are going to come and do it for you. Whereas perhaps from some other places you might hear, who are you? You never even came to the temple. You didn't even give an alms. Last time I spoke to your father, I asked him to build the pagoda for us, and he didn't. He completely ignored me. Now you want me to come and do his pansukul. Some places you might even hear that. Beware when you walk into one. You can get all sorts. So anyhow, it's the 5th, 6th day. Now people are all aware of this. We've not gone past the funeral. I forgot the funeral. Let's come back. So funeral, right? Now you're in a big box, your last resting place, right? And the box is open, your coffin. There are flowers to make you look good, because that is the best you're going to be looked, the best you're going to look for the rest of your, can't say life, you're dead now. So you've asked the embalmers to, you know, smarten you up. By the way, now there are packages you can buy beforehand. That's just informing you. See how good I am? You can pick your package, your send-off party. You can even choose the fabric. Go for a soft one. The satin cloth, I'm told, is very nice. Okay, so when you go to the funeral director, they'll give you a few packages. Make sure you choose the right one. Right? Because you want to be sent off. You want to be sent off nice and comfortable, right? Yes. Of course. Do all those now, all these things now, because appamadina sampadeta, you know. I don't know, what's with me and sarcasm today? There's a hidden message behind all of this. So as I sting you, I need you to come to your senses. I'm the scorpion today. I'll keep stinging you because I need you to come to your senses. What did the Buddha really mean by appamadena sampadeta? So for the funeral, we have to invite everyone. So let's start sending the invitations. You are a teacher. Oh, you are the principal of the school, so we have to invite all the teachers, right? Let's ring the school and inform the staff. Right, let's get the message out, and you're going to get the entire school turn up. Right? Each one of them will bring with them. What do they normally bring these days to a funeral? Bag of sugar? Tea bags? Tea? Sugar? Milk powder? Something like that? Most of them will just come, you know, just swinging their arms, right? But some will, because there's going to be a free meal. For some people, you're better dead than alive. No, true. Some people, for some people, you're better dead than alive. So, the school they've come. If you were the, maybe a well-known figure in the village, maybe you were the president of the Marnadhara Samiti, or the village council. Now you have to get the word out. Posters will be going up. Anichchavata Sankara, with your picture on it, right? With your expiry date and your production date on either side. Right? And you'll have the word Satishya Sangvega. Oh, there's going to be a notice in the obituary. And here's how it's going to read. The father of Siripala Jr., MBBS, FRCP, graduate, UK, Australia, Canada, Sri Lanka, wherever, and then the father-in-law of, and their name, who is also a well-known, respected individual in their profession. You know, this is really an advert. It's not so much an obituary. It's more of an advertisement of their services so that they get an opportunity to shine amongst their peers. You know, get the newspaper out one of these days and just have a look at the obituary. Just look at what's on there. One of these days I'll bring you and read you one, okay? I'll leave the names out because I'll be too rude. I'll read an obituary out to you and you can tell me whether it is actually to inform of the dead person's passing away or whether it is in fact a hidden opportunity for people to advertise who they are to the rest of the world, to blow their own trumpets. See, sometimes you're better dead than alive. I'm talking about your story. So that advert will go in the newspaper. Now your children will say, will tell the world who they are and the fact that you are dead, but it'll be more the former than the latter, and everyone's invited to the funeral. Now the funeral. Talking about the funeral, it's a fantastic opportunity to show your prowess, to show how connected you are. So you have to make it glamorous. While you're in that box rotting away, there'll be people around you who will make this an opportunity to show off who they are to their next door neighbors, to their relations, to their villages, to the other people in the village, to the society, to their co-workers and so on. Tell me these things don't happen and I will shut up. Honestly, tell me these things don't happen in society. Are we so naive to think that a funeral is purely, the sole intention of holding a funeral is to pay last respect to the person who's passed away? No. Just walk into one of these days and see the things that go on in there. Appamadena sampadeta. Of course. Everyone else is doing that, making an opportunity of it to show off who they are. I've heard sometimes people say, you know, you may not believe me when I say this, but I have heard it through my own, you know, from my own ears. People have said, when they pass invitations, sometimes, you know, they invite like senior officials, maybe big shots, right? And they'll say things like this, Mr. Vijayasekaran, when you come, can you come in your Mercedes, please? I've heard things like that. How embarrassing is that? Why do they make that invitation? When you come, can you come in your Mercedes, please? Why? So that when they park their car outside, everybody else gets to know that I am well connected. This is all at your funeral. So where's marking this respect? Where's all that gone? I'm talking about what's going to happen to you. See, when you are gone, you are just an opportunity for people to monetize, get something out of. Guru Swami Nanase always reminds us, always think of yourself as a tissue paper. A tissue paper is only as useful, is only good before you use it. Right? After you used it, who cares about it? Who cares about it? Nobody. After you used a tissue paper, you just put it in the bin and that's it. We move on. When was the last time you wiped your hands on a piece of tissue and then looked at it and said, thank you? When was the last time you felt grateful to a tissue paper? You don't do that, because a tissue paper is just that. Once you wipe off your dirt, you throw it away and you move on. Nobody cares about the tissue paper. Therefore, appamadena sampadeta. At the funeral, people will be eating, will be drinking, they'll be laughing, you know, they'll be quiet for a little while. Oh, and when it's time to close the box, now people have to cry again. This is the drill. Right? When it's time to close the box, the crying starts again. You know, there are some funerals where people are hired to cry. Because the children, they don't feel anything. All they think is, you know, this is the person that taught me, this is the person that fed me. No, they passed away. I don't feel a special connection towards, you know, that this is my mother or my father. And there's a reason for that. You didn't have the time to instill those values in your children because you were far too busy earning for them, feeding them, giving them an education. You didn't have the time to instill in them values about parenting and how a parent is so important to a child and what that relationship is, that sublime relationship. So therefore, all they knew was, here's the person that fed me, now I've got my own way of making my ends meet. So therefore, it was just a burden, just a weight to the family. And now it's gone. Good riddance. Because, you know, when she was alive, just think about it, right? I don't think any of you feel this way. But just think about it, because there are plenty of people who do. Achi Amma is now just a trouble at home, isn't she? That old Achi Amma. Because wherever you go, you have to take her with you. You have to drag her along with you. So even if you go, now you can't plan like going out, you know, hiking. You can't plan things like that. You can't plan going to see the, you know, going for walks. You can't plan things like that because she can't walk. So if you do plan on something like that, you have to leave her in the car by herself. And then if she's in the car by herself and if she needs the toilet, then what happens? Now she's going to wet herself in the car. Now what's going to happen? Now we have to wash the car. And she's going to ruin it. See, she's just a pest. Isn't she? Siya is now just a pest, isn't he? Just a parasite. Feeding off of us. And sometimes, you know, they talk to the young children at home, right, putting in all this rubbish into their heads, like fear of God, and don't do bad things, you know, be respectful, be virtuous, all these things. What rubbish! How can you bring up children like this, in today's day and age? You've got to encourage them to go on and to do their education and do sport and things like that. Whereas Achi Amma and Siya, they're not talking about any of those things. They don't even speak English. So let's make sure that they don't get to be there when our friends come over. How embarrassing they are. I'm sorry, dear ladies and gentlemen, I have seen this with my very own eyes, how people fall into this plight. You are next in line. Appamadena sampadet. When you're weak and feeble, when you're on your bed, right, and you go back to your second childhood in life, back then you were cute and cuddly, and everybody wanted to hold you and carry you and hear your sweet talk and do gu-gu, baba. They want to do all those things with you back when you were in your first childhood. But in your second childhood, shut up. If you've got the television, here's the remote, just shut up. We'll bring your meals on time, right? If you need to go to the toilet, there's the maid who can look after you, right? So why bother us? Just die, will you? If I was given a dollar for every time I've seen something like that, by this time I'll be a very rich man. My role here today is not to fix society today. I'm not saying let's go change all that. What I'm saying is you're next in line. Please, appamadena sampadete. You're next in line. Do you think all the old people in the old people's homes, they don't have children to look after them? I used to work in a care home. I spent 2 years of my learning life when I wanted to do medicine at university. They wanted experience. So I went and worked in a care home. I've seen it all. I've seen it all. The ill treatment that children inflict upon their loving parents. Loving parents. Again, I repeat, this is not me saying let's go fix that problem in society, let's cleanse society. No, no. That's not my task today. My task is appamadena sampadete. This is where you're heading. This is why I ask you, when is it too early to start this journey? But usually, for people, sasana starts after they're 60, after they're 70, when they're too old for anything else. Don't ever let that happen to you. Parents here who bring their young children along, I have a lot of respect for you, because you don't want what might happen to you happen to them. Because today you are beginning to realize that whilst we commit and dedicate a portion of our lives to everything else, perhaps there's one thing that we tend to forget, and that is our own salvation. Working in a care home, I've seen it all. So many times, right? You know, and that was a paying home. So it cost a lot of money to put your old parents in there. So the service there was excellent. It was a private care home, and the service was excellent. You could ask for anything you wanted, right? And usually within a short period of time, you would get it. The food, fantastic. Comfortable. Air-conditioned rooms, if you needed it. Central heating, all there. Nice big television screen to keep you occupied. You get the newspapers delivered to you. The morning tea when you wake up, it's all there. But that is not what the parents ask for. That is not what they ask for. When they're on their beds, rotting away, they're still alive, but rotting away, the one request that you always get from them is, when do I get to see my daughter again? When do I get to see my son again? Sometimes we pretend that they're on the other end of the phone and we talk to them and say, Frank, let me just ring your daughter for a second, okay? So we pretend, and there's a nurse on the other side of the phone. We're pretending that we're actually talking to this man's daughter just to make them feel better. Because the last time we spoke to their actual daughter, you know what she said? What does he expect of us? If we put him in a good care home and we are paying for him to be fed, we are paying for him to be washed, and we are paying for him to be cleansed, and he's got a TV and he's got every other material need that he can ask for, I don't have the time for this. I've got my own family to look after. I've got my children to look after. I've got my husband to look after. I've got my work to do. Sod off. And ask him not to bother me. I'll come when I come. Sorry, madam. I'll pass a message. Frank, yes, your daughter says she's doing very well and she sends you her love. And she says that she'll come and see you very shortly. Did she really? Oh yes, Frank, she did. And we put a smile on that face. But the poor man's got Alzheimer's. So what you told him, he forgets by the next morning. He's now a tissue paper, used up, no longer of any value. Now they have to pay because they have to put him somewhere, right? And they think their obligation is to make sure that he's fed. I'm not, again, I reiterate this message, ladies and gentlemen, this is not to say, let's go fix them. No, I can't fix the world, but I can fix you, because you bring yourself here. Appama dena sampadeta. How do you think those children went on to become so successful? Without a modicum of help from their parents, do you think? Don't you think those parents love their children just as much as you do yours? Don't you think their parents sacrifice themselves just as much as you do for yours? Their education, their well-being. You know, Frank tells me that when he was younger, he built a house, a big house, which he gave to his daughter. So now the daughter has no mortgage to pay. So she lives in his father's house, in her father's house. It's a big house with a nice garden. This is what Frank did for her daughter, for his daughter, beg your pardon. But now what does the daughter say? If he's got a place to be, if I'm paying his fees, then what else do you ask of me? There are some children, we refrain from putting them on the phone to their parents, because if they do, then we have to fix them emotionally after the end of the phone call. No, we do, really. Because they speak to them in such harsh language. Because to them, they're just a nuisance, a menace. But the parents themselves, all they want is another day, another hour, just to spend some time with their children. Appamadena sampadeta. That day when I spoke about gratitude, I only said, be grateful. Don't expect gratitude. I never said that. Be grateful. Don't expect it. Appamadena sampadeta. You have to work on your own salvation, dear ladies and gentlemen, because no one else will be there for you when you are of no value to anybody else. Today they're with you. Now, I'm not saying that everyone out there is just so vile and vicious and terrible. That's not what I'm saying. There are good people out there, few and far between though. Few and far between, very few and far between. And partly the reason for that is because they're all so very busy. And so many vexations bothering them. So many dreams and goals and hopes that they have to fulfill, that they have very little time to come and look after you. I mean, that is their excuse. Be that right or wrong, at the end of the day, that is the state of affairs. So who's going to be there to look after you? But here's the thing. Perhaps you've already seen this coming. Perhaps. And therefore, perhaps you've already planned for your retirement. Perhaps you've already planned for when you're older, so that you don't have to be a burden on your children. Maybe, you know, you say it with pride. Swami Nansa, I've already got it all planned. I've got it all planned. I'm not going to be a burden on my children. I've got a place to be. I've got... That's all sorted. Nothing to worry about. Yes, physically. That is not what Frank asked for. I say that again. That's not what Frank wanted. He had everything at the tip of his fingers. But what he didn't have was the caring, the love, the affection that he so yearned for, that he didn't get. So if you reach that point in your life, without strengthening your mind to be able to self-sustain yourself, if you continue to be who you are today, then expecting happiness to come from the outside, expecting others to make you happy, excuse me, expecting gratitude, expecting anything really, you're going to be in for a big surprise. The values and the virtues that prevailed in our great grandparents' times don't prevail today. We must admit and accept that. Politeness is gone. Courtesy is gone. Goodness is gone. Gratitude is gone. Sorry, I'm not trying to paint a grim and gloomy picture of society, but what I'm saying is the truth, unfortunately. Because today people don't have the time to build such relationships. Excuse me. They don't have the time for that. I think the first or the second talk that I did with you, I talked about how busy people have become. And in that busyness, there's no time to foster relationships. How often do you go and see your parents? Come up with your own answer. If you don't live with them, how often do you go and see them? If you don't live with your grandparents, how often do you get to go and see them? There may be those among you who are fortunate enough to be with your parents. Still, even after having been married and maybe living with children, you're still with your parents. How fortunate you are. You still get to earn merits, and your pair and your children get to do the same. I'm not saying we should all live in one house, you know, a nuclear family, everyone should be in the same. That's not what I'm saying. But how often do you get to spend time with them today? You don't. Hardly at all. How often do you get time to go and see the Buddha? Once a month? Sometimes maybe not even that. How often do people get to go and talk to a Swami Nohanse? Oh yes, at the Pansukula. That's when. So really, in some ways, you know, it's a blessing for someone in the family to pass away, because you get to invite a monk and offer some alms and get to listen to a preaching, right? Appamadena sampadeta. Do you all accept and understand I'm speaking on your behalf here? You know, I'm not being scornful, right? I am speaking on your behalf because I care, ladies and gentlemen, I care. To me, you are not man or woman. To me, you're just a mind that needs help. That is why you bring yourselves here. This is the future that awaits for pretty much every one of you. A future in which when you are gone, nobody gives a damn. They will, until they can work out your leftovers. Your property, your last will, how much, how many, once that's all sorted, once the business has been transferred, once the assets have been acquired, right, then that's it. No one cares about you after that. You're just a tissue paper. I'll ask you this question. Your father, so some of you passed away, right? How many years did you actually go and give an alms in his name? For how many years after that? The first year, it was very special. Remember? The second year, also it was a little bit special, but not everyone came. The first year, everyone came. The whole family united, because they all wanted to be there. But the second year, only those who lived in the locality came. The third year, it just became a ritual. By the fourth or the fifth year, if we have time, we'll do it this year. Now what happened to the father? After 5 years, he's history. Is that all he did for you? Can you pay back for all that he did for you by offering 5 almsgivings and transferring merits to him? Job done. Wipe your hands and go move on. I'm not saying this is you, I'm saying this is typical. I might come across like I'm telling you off, but that's not what I'm doing here. I'm saying this is typical. So again, I'm saying, I'm not suggesting let's go fix society. All I'm saying again is, appamadena sampadeta, your children will remember you for the next 5 years. By the fifth year, you will just be a name. There'll be a photograph of you hung up on the wall, right, for a few months, so that when people come and ask, that was him. There'll be a flower garland around it for a little while. After that, they'll turn it around, right? And then when they do a makeover, right, the house needs a refurbishment, a whitewash, they'll take it out and put it in a cupboard somewhere. Then you can be in that cupboard for the rest of your existence. They'll put you in a drawer. That's it. Never to be spoken about again. My late father. That's all it'll be. Yes, he was late. Certainly. Why? What he didn't do was appamadena sampadeta. He was late. So true. I don't wish for that to happen to any of you. That is why, whilst you are being appamadena sampadeta, which is, what does appamadena sampadeta mean after all? Be heedful. Exercise yourself diligently. Apply yourself heedfully in the Dhamma. That is what the Buddha said. Because that is the only salvation that you have. Atta Deepa Viharata. Make the Dhamma an island and live in it, because that is the only refuge you have. Gradually I'll begin to explain to you, ladies and gentlemen, how you and what you think are simply the product of circumstances around you. Right now you might think that you are in command. That is only a false notion of yourself. That is not so. It is just a delusion that you have. You are deluded. You know this. Raga, Dvesha and Moha. What is Moha? Delusion. Desire, aversion and delusion. For as long as Moha prevails in the mind, which is delusion, which is a defilement, you live in an illusion that you are in command. that you are the self that you think you are. You think this to yourself. Therefore, you feel that everything that happens to you, you are in command. Let me give you a very simple example. A very simple example for the time being to prove that this is not the case. I'm going to say a word and I want you not to think of it. Okay? Are you ready? I'm going to say a word and I want you not to think of it because you're in command, right? So if when you're in command, you decide what you do and what you don't do, right? Yeah? Do you decide what you do and what you don't do? Let's be honest. You feel that way, don't you? You're in command. I decide what I do with my life. It's my car, my petrol, my life, right? These are the things that we say to ourselves. I'm going to say a word and I want you not to think of it. Chimpanzee. Don't think of it. What should you not think of? See, you're already I said don't think of it. Don't think of the word chimpanzee. Why are you thinking about it? Don't think about it. The last word I said was, see, you're already, and I haven't even said it yet. Isn't this evidence that you are not in control of your thoughts? I can make you think what I want you to think. Now imagine this happening in your last moment. Some people think that in my last moments, I'm just going to have very nice, lovely thoughts. So divine thoughts, and therefore in my last moments I will certainly go to the heavens. People convince themselves with this, and I really feel sorry about them. Because having convinced themselves of that, you know, they just live a carefree life. But that's not the way it works. You don't get to decide what thought comes into your mind in your last moment. You don't get to decide that. You are not God. You are just a subject of God. God decides. By God, I mean Vipaka decides. I'm going to make a noise. I want you not to hear it. Don't hear that noise. Stop hearing that noise. You hear that knocking? Yeah? Why are you nodding your head? Can you stop hearing it? Can you? No. So, do you get to decide what you hear? Then do you get to decide what you see? Do you get to decide what you sense or what you think? Of course not. Now you might say, well, Swami Nas, I always got the choice. If I don't like what you're saying, I can stand up and leave this room. Yes. And then what happens? When you leave this room, you'll see all the things that are outside this room. If you claim to have control over what you see, leave this room and not see the things that are outside this room. If you can claim to have control over what you see, leave this room and see the things that are in this room. Then I will accept that you have control over what goes on in your mind. But you can't. All that happens is cause and effect. There is no doer here. It's just the done. You are being done. You think you are the doer. That is your false sense of self. I know this is too early for this. I don't mean by time. I mean in our series of talks. This is what we talk about on a Saturday at the monastery. But we'll get there. This is just a trailer for your musings. This is what's coming. But before that, you need to understand a few basics. You need to get the foundations right. It would be foolish of me, it would be unwise of me to come and completely just drop on you the most profound teachings of the Buddha, because in my experience, it doesn't work like that. There are people who have come to our monastery, because by now we have about 450 people. So we have a fair bit of experience helping people walk the path of Dhamma. A fair bit. So there are people who come along and say, "Swami Nand sir, I've come to the temple, give me the Dhamma. Make me an Arahant, I'm ready for it." We've tried. In our naiveness, we've tried. So we sit the man down and say, "Right, Buddha, now listen to this. Right? I'm going to teach you the Paticchasamuppada. I'm going to teach you cause and effect and how jati happens and how you have to free yourself from that." He listens. He listens very attentively. For 2 weeks, he behaves like an Arahant. He walks, looking down. He eats anything. You know, he's like an Arahant. And we thought, oh, it worked. In the third week, he's gone. And then we try and find out, where did he go? What happened? Girlfriend. He had gotten a call from his girlfriend. And she'd said on the phone, "Ayyana thubba." That's it. The Arahant has left. Dear departed. So, ladies and gentlemen, it doesn't work like that. This is not a lot at once. This is a little every day. Consistency is the name of this game. A little bit every day. That's how this works. That is how I am where I am today. You know, I listened to the Dhamma for 5 long years before I decided it was time to ordain. Every Saturday I would go and listen to my teacher. And in between, in the week, I'd go and find time to go and discuss with him the points that I was still confused about. Clearing things out. Making sure that this was the right path. Remember, I was a scientist before everything. I never took anything at face value. Everything had to make sense to me. Like science has to make sense, it had to make sense. What you see today is that transformation that happened over a period of time. That is why it is unwise and foolish of me to think that I can just come and drop a bomb on you and expect all of you to become Buddhas. It doesn't work like that. So therefore, I have to take you on this journey. And I do it with care. I do it because I care. It would be quite easy for me to just come and show off all the things I know. And you'll also be very impressed. Wow, that Swami Nwase knows a thing or two. He's preaching the Abhidhamma. Look, he knows a lot. He's talking, he's giving preachings from that sermon and this sutra and that pitaka and so on. Wow, he's a really well-educated and well-known Swami Nwase. But I'm not here to impress anybody. If anything, I'm here to impress you about yourself. Help you understand how much you are capable of. But that journey we have to go on one step at a time. This is a gradual transformation. And it will happen. I promise you, it will happen. But for that to happen, we need to get our foundations right. We need to get our basics right. That is why I ask you, if your elderly mother is today at home with no one to look after her, no one to take care of her, and you feel that she is just a pest, a nuisance, I'm sorry to say, no Dhamma will reach your mind. Because if you can't have a sense of gratitude to those who sacrificed their lives for you, to that mother who gave birth to you, and then from there on, perhaps she didn't have the means, maybe she didn't have the education to teach you, to guide you, to help you go on to become who you are today, but she was always there for you. If that doesn't happen in your life, this will never happen in your life. First you become a good child, then you become a good arahant. That is always the way it works. To become a sotapanna, first you have to become a good person, a good human being. You have to become virtuous. And this is not suggesting that you are not. I'm just telling the truth. I would never suggest that you are not. I'm sure you are. That is what brings you here. That is why you are here. But that transformation has to happen. That gratefulness, that gratitude, that kindness, that gentleness, being patient, sometimes making small sacrifices on behalf of other people. What are good manners if not petty sacrifices? All of these things are important. Because we are in the process of actually producing a well-rounded, virtuous, good, wholesome human being. Not just a mere arahant who is knowledgeable in the Dhamma. We don't do that at our monastery. So therefore, we don't do it here. So from time to time, I'll remind you, just to take a check, just check yourself, where I am, where am I? Never be Frank's daughter or Frank's son. Never be that person. But be mindful that your time is going to be running out, and it is running out, and one day the tick-tock, tick-tock, tick-tock will stop. When the alarm goes off, that's it. Time is up. We've all come with a limited amount of time, and we know this. This is no surprise to you. And for some of you, that time is running out sooner rather than later. Of course, you know, sudden death can happen to any of us. Perhaps the youngest person in this room may be the first to go. That is always possible. But if we discount sudden death and we just talk about natural death, then there are those among you who are closer to that destination than some of the others in this room. But you are not too late. Because if you can still hear what I'm saying, and if this makes sense to you, and you're putting the best you can, your 100% to your salvation, then you are heedful. That is the virtue, that is the quality of being Appama Dena Sampadeta. All I'm reminding you here, dear ladies and gentlemen, is in every other walk in life, you are doing it. That is why I said at the start, as a teacher, you are heedful. As a lawyer, you are heedful. As a good citizen of this country, you are heedful. As a mother, as a father, you are. As a professional, you are. As a sportsman, you are. As a businessman, you are. As an entrepreneur, you are. As a politician, you are. You are. As a company director, you are. You are in every other way except for one. I'm here to talk about that. Your salvation. Because when everything is said and done, that's all that remains. That is all that will matter. What you think is the circumstances that surround you. You can't decide what you think. I've got a good question today. When anger comes into the mind, what do we do? See, if you were in control of your thoughts, then my answer to that question should be, stop being angry. Right? If you are in control of your thoughts, then my answer to that question should be what? Well, if you're getting angry, then just don't be angry. Right, 3, 2, 1, go. Right, okay, so I'm in answer, from now on, I'm not going to be angry. Does that work? A mere resolution, do you think it works? No, it doesn't work like that, because anger is the product of causes, cause and effect. For as long as there are causes, there will be the effect. What we need to figure out is, what are those causes? In yesterday's sermon, a fantastic example came up, and I want you to think about it as well. I asked the question from the audience, how, you know, where does lust come from? lustful thoughts, sensual thoughts. You've all been victims of that. That's no, you know, it's no secret. We've all been victims of that. Lustful, sensual thoughts. Whether you call it sexual or sensual, let's just take it broadly and generally, sensual thoughts, karma. I asked a question yesterday from the audience. When you see a woman, right, so I'm speaking to the men, think about a woman, and you, the others can think the other way, or whichever way works for you. When you see someone and you have sensual thoughts towards that person, you know, in that moment, you think that that sensuality, that sensualness is a characteristic of the person, don't you? You feel that way. Do you admit? Okay. When you say something is sensually attractive, right? Or something is attractive, something is good looking, something is pretty, something is nice. You think that that is a characteristic of that object, of that person. So the question I asked the audience was, if you take the example of a man and a woman, and the man thinks that there's a woman who is sensually attractive, maybe say at the age of 18, okay, so there's a girl who's 18 years of age and someone thinks that she looks dazzling, but in a sensual way. The question was this, you know, this child had parents who looked after her for 18 years, and when, from the day she was born, there's not an inch of her that this child's parents would not have seen. Because they would have washed her bottom, right from head to toe, they would have seen it all. But neither mother nor father would have had even a single sensual thought towards the daughter. Yeah? So even as the girl was growing up, right, the mother and father, they don't have such thoughts towards the girl, because that is their daughter. So how come then, for 18 long years, the parents never had thoughts like that towards their daughter, but someone who only sees the face, someone comes along to this person's life, just, you know, 18 long years after she has begun to live, right? At 18 years of age, someone sees this person, looks at their face, maybe sees their figure, but, you know, fully clothed, and has sensual thoughts. If the sensualness is in the person, then who are the first people to have had those thoughts? Mother and father, right? But did it happen? No. Meaning, it is not in the girl. Otherwise, such thoughts should also have risen in Achyamma's mind, in Siya's mind. But it didn't. She had siblings, and it didn't arise in their minds. But a stranger saw this girl one day, at school maybe, right? A boy saw the girl and she said, wow. Sensually attractive, thought he. Where did that sensualness come from? Is it in the girl? No. It's in the mind of the observer, meaning it's an illusion. Did you get that? Meaning, it's an illusion. Meaning, it doesn't really exist. What you're seeing is a specter. It's like seeing a ghost. Now, I want you to start thinking about this. Have you seen crazy people? You seen crazy people? I live with them, so I'm in answer. How do you know a crazy man when you see one? Like a madman, like someone who's a lunatic. Like if you go to the mental hospital, perhaps, no offense, yeah, it's a mental ailment, right? Sometimes they'll just stare at the ceiling and they'll say, Hava, Hava. Why do you say this man's mad? Because you look up, there's no Hava. So why do you say this guy's crazy? Because he sees things that don't really exist. Okay. Coming back to our previous question, have you seen crazy people? No? What, don't you have mirrors at home? So that's today when you go home, walk in front of the mirror and ask it, mirror, mirror on the wall, who's the craziest of them all? People, I care about you. You've gone mad. If you see sensualness out there, you need help. Because you're seeing things that don't exist. If you see someone and you sense anger, and you think it's they who make you angry, you need help. Because the very person that you feel these feelings of anger towards, you know, their loved ones, they don't feel that. They don't feel that about themselves either. Now, anger can come in various forms. Sometimes anger can be destructive. Like when you, you know, go into a fury, right, and you start shouting at someone, or you go really, you know, really mad in the sense of angry mad, right? But anger can be even more subtle. Like when you see something ugly, that is also anger. It is a variant of anger. You see something really, you know, disturbing, that is also a variant of anger. The best word for anger is dvesha. In Pali, it is dvesha. You know what dvesha means? You know what asha means, right? Is liking. Dve means two. So what does dvesha mean? Meaning you like not this, but the other. So wherever you like something other than what you see, what you hear, what you smell, what you taste, or what you think, that is always dvesha. You could give the word anger, but that is only one manifestation of dvesha. Anger is just one manifestation. It's just one behavioral trait. It's just one production of anger. It's just one demonstration of dvesha, sorry. Anger is just one demonstration of dvesha. It's not the be-all and end-all of dvesha. Dvesha is wherever your mind likes one, but when presented with another, it seeks the other, that which you like. So therefore that conflict, whenever your mind is in conflict, that is when your mind is experiencing dvesha. Now that conflict can come in various forms. Last week we talked about the button coming off as you're getting yourself ready for the morning. Maybe if you're packing up your bag and the zip comes off, you know how we feel. Or maybe, you know, you got your coffee, you're quickly running back to your desk to send that email off, and someone bumps into you and the coffee is all over your shirt. Now how do you feel in that moment? Dvesha. You may not shout at them. You may not shout at them. You might go, oh, I'm really sorry. You might, you know, because you've got to be polite, right? You might control your anger. But really, your mind is already in dvesha because you can't accept it equanimously. See, the thing is, you know, when the mind is ignorant, the mind always has preferences. It likes things and dislikes things. This is the result of you splitting this world in two. You don't see the whole world as one. You see the whole world as two halves. There's the good things and there are the bad things. But that is only subjective. Because what you think is bad, someone else thinks is good. What you think is good, others might think is bad. So what's good and bad? Subjective, isn't it? Your subjective division of things in this world is the root cause of your suffering. Whenever you have expectations on this world, you expect one thing versus another. Now start thinking about some of the expectations that you have. The report's got to be done on time. The meeting should start at 6. They should park in their slot. Why do they park in my slot? See? Expectations. If I gave them way, why don't they wave their hand to say thank you? Expectations. I've got right of way. Why are they horning me? I've got right of way. Expectations. Catch yourself when this happens to you and then analyze it. What we learn here is how do we analyze those moments that take place in our minds? Because you know what? The one thing that you have studied so little about is what? Yes. Yourself. We know so much about everything else, but the one thing we know so little about is ourselves. That is why, even at the age of 80, Achyamma is still in the temple trying to figure out what to do when she gets angry. Because she's had hardly any time at all to think about that, because she was far too busy providing for her family, doing her job, doing the dishes, cleaning the house, paying the bills, running the errands, doing the shopping, see, and looking after the children. And then what comes next? The what children? Grandchildren. Achyammas, be careful. There's no end to this. There's no end to this. If there are Achyammas in the house, Appamadena Sampadeta, there is no end to this. Because your children, and then you dote on your grandchildren. If you could, you'd hang around to see your great-grandchildren. The mind cannot be satisfied. And there's a reason for that. The mind cannot be satisfied because, ladies and gentlemen, if you expect an external object to make you happy, it will never do, because happiness is not intrinsic in the object. But that expectation will never go away, because your ignorance tells you that it's still there. So you keep on looking for it. Imagine wearing your glasses on your head and looking around your house until you find it. When are you going to find it, and when are you going to stop? Tell me. You wear your glasses on your head and you're looking for it. When are you going to find it, and when are you going to stop? Tell me. And you need them as well. You absolutely need them. Your reading glasses. There's a document you have to read. It's got to be signed. It's got to be sent, right? But you don't know where it is because it's on your head. Now you walk around looking for it. You look under the bed, you look under the pillows, you look in the fridge, you look under the sink, you go look in the car, maybe it's in a cubby hole, maybe it's in the dicky, you look under the seat, you go look in the washing machine, right? You leave no stone unturned, you go looking for it, except for what? The one place where it is. In the same way, if you look for happiness to come to you from the outside, it won't stop at children. It will then go on to grandchildren. And if you could, to great-grandchildren. And therefore God, in all His gracefulness, He limited your life so that you couldn't hang around till your great-great-great-grandchildren came around. Because if you did, there would be no peace. Is it not funny that on every tombstone they engrave three letters? R.I.P. What does it say? Rest in peace. What does that tell you about the person during his life? Do you remember Angulimala when he met the Buddha? And he said, Buddha, stop. Actually, he didn't know that was the Buddha, so he said, stop. And the Buddha replied, Angulimala, I rest in peace. It's time you did. By that point, he had already rested in peace. In the sasana, you don't have to die to rest in peace. Welcome to the Buddha sasana. I'm so happy. Thank you. I want you to experience the joy that I'm going through right now, ladies and gentlemen. I can feel it in every bone of my body. I can feel it in every cell of my body. And if I could achieve it, so can you all. Because there is nothing special about me. I'm just like you. We are no different. The problems that you had, Putha, I had in my life. We're all the same. The transformation was the Dhamma. Because I realized happiness doesn't come from the outside. That helped me stop setting expectations on outside things to make me happy. And the moment I was able to achieve that, I rest in peace. You can rest in peace. You don't have to die for that. But today, you think it is only death that can bring you peace. Why? What is a life, ladies and gentlemen, if its ambition is the end of it? Is that the value of life? If all you have to wait for, if all you look forward to is the end of it, isn't that why people say, finally I can close my eyes in peace? I mean, what a sorry life that must have been. It doesn't need to be like that. So we need to begin to understand now, as students of life, as students of the Dhamma, as followers of the Buddha, we need to now start making our way forward. Start to ask questions of yourself as you encounter situations in life, circumstances in life. Start to ask questions of yourself. Why do I get angry? How do I see sensuality in an object, in a person? If you see a person, a man or a woman, and you think attractive, sensually attractive, because a lot of young people these days suffer from this mental illness. But you ask people outside these four walls, they'll say that is pretty normal. You've got to be like that. In fact, you know, if your young child, son or daughter, doesn't have feelings for another boy or girl, what might you do? You'll take them to the doctor, won't you? So where should we take young Rahul Ahamdru? Where should we take Sunita and Sopa, Kamarhatan Mahanse, who attained Arahathood at the age of 7? Shouldn't we take them to the doctor as well? That's the thing. In a world where everyone's mad, everyone should be mad. If you're not mad, in a world, because in the mental asylum, everyone should be mad. Because otherwise, people think you're mad. It's a crazy world out there. When everyone says, hey, that girl, she's... You've got to agree. You have to agree. Because otherwise, they'll think you're mad. You know, if your 15-year-old, if your 16-year-old doesn't start to have feelings towards a boy or a girl, typically someone in the family will suggest, I think we have to take him to a therapist. And maybe the mother or father will say, no, no, just give him time, you know, he's into his education, right? He's not into that sort of thing yet, right? Just give him time. What about at the age of 20? And he still doesn't have feelings. You will most certainly take him to the therapist. And what are you going to ask the therapist to do now? You're going to say, this is what you will be telling the therapist. Mr. Therapist, my son doesn't see ghosts. Make him. Make him see them. Because I see ghosts. My son doesn't. Please help him. See, if sensuality is in a girl, then I admit we should all see it. But if it is in her, then the parents should have seen it. For 18 long years, they've seen her from head to toe. Yeah? For 18 long years, they've seen her from head to toe. Not just the face. I mean, nowadays you have provocative fashion. Right? You cover up 99%. Oh, no, sorry. You reveal 99% and you cover the 1%. Again, nothing against it. You know, my role here is not to judge anybody or anything. It's just to help you. But that 1% as well, the parents would have seen, right? At home. But they didn't have any feelings of sensuality, sensual lust towards a girl. So how come then someone seeing the girl on TV has such thoughts? Is it in the girl? You've got to answer the question now. Is it in the girl? No. Now then tell me, what's pornography for? Mad people. That is how, when young people come to our monastery, sometimes addicted to pornography, we talk to them. We explain to them the truth. And we save them. We free them. Not by hitting them, not by locking them up. Because when you have the truth, why give lies? And we don't say, Putha, look at the girl and think of the digestive system. And think about how the food is now going down the esophagus and into the stomach, and now it's, you know, half digested food, and a little bit, you know, in a moment it's going to become kaki putha, kaki. We don't do that. Because what is that? That is dvesha. Again, you know, it's just the other side of the coin. If raga is on the one side, dvesha is on the other side. So we don't practice iya, the monastery. Because that is not the Buddha's philosophy. The Buddha's philosophy is to see the truth. It's not to be repulsive towards something. Because that again is a defilement. To be repulsed by something is a defilement. Just as attractive, to be attracted by something is a defilement, so is to be repulsed by something. They're just, you know, two ends of the same spectrum. That is not the way we practice. We just see the truth. We realize that sensuality, as well as things like anger, they're all makings of the mind, and it is not something that is to be found in the external event or the object or the person. It's not out there. So once you realize that, you stop seeking it from the outside, don't you? And then you begin to realize, well, if it's not there, why am I seeing it? It's like seeing an apparition. A ghost, a specter. Nobody else sees it, but I do. People who are mentally sane, they don't see these things, but I do. What does that tell you about yourself? I'm mentally insane. I'm unstable. I need help. You know, when you walk, if you have a limp, you go to the doctor because everybody else doesn't have a limp. In the same way, That is why in today's society, you know, you are okay as you are. Nobody points a finger at you because everyone has lust. So therefore, nobody points a finger at you. Because everyone feels anger, nobody points a finger at you. They say, that's just normal. You just need to be able to control your anger. Right? And channel it in the right way. Learn to control your emotions. Emotions are fine, just learn to control them, is what people say. No. Lust is not fine. Anger is not fine. It's not an emotion you need to learn to control. It's an emotion you need to learn the origins of and free yourself from. Because if it's not there in the object and you're sensing it, that's crazy. That's why what you find pretty, another person says is ugly. Last week we talked about the flowers. Someone likes red flowers, other likes blue flowers. How come? If beauty is in the flower, then everyone should find the same flower beautiful, but they don't. Why do you have so many types of music? If it's the same type of music that is nice to hear for everybody, then accept it. But some people like classical, some people like rock, some people like the blues, some people like jazz. How so? Ask your Siya to sing a Palkavi at home. Your children will probably run away. What is that brain, they might ask? But back then, you know, that was how people entertained themselves. The Palkavi, the Goyankavi, and so on. Parukavi. That is the entertainment that people had. But play today's music to Siya. Get him to listen to a rock band. What's he gonna say? Yes, exactly. Stop that nuisance. What are you doing? What are you young people doing these days? And then you say, you know, it's a clash of generations. You know, my grandfather is just too old. He doesn't get this. And grandfather says, you're too young. You don't get this. So who's right and who's wrong? That's not the right question to be asking. It's not who's right, who's wrong. Ultimately, they're both wrong. I'm going to help you to love all children the same. So that you don't feel your child is special. That is how I see children. I love all children the same. So you can love every man and woman the same. But in that sense, love is a very different thing. It's not worldly love. It's a far more spiritual love. It is compassion. It is loving kindness. It is a love that is not selfish. It is a love that is selfless. It is a love where you don't expect anything in return. It is said that a mother loves her child in that way, expecting nothing in return. Whether that is right or wrong, if the mother could learn to love all children the same, I think that would be a fantastic thing to aspire to. So, what I ask of you all today is appamadena sampadeta. Because you are heedful in virtually every other walk of life, every other facet of life, in every other thing you engage in yourselves in, you are appamadena sampadeta. In other words, you engage yourself heedfully. You apply yourself heedfully. And earnestly and diligently. My ask of you, dear ladies and gentlemen, is please take a moment to think about where you are in this picture. What place have you given to yourselves in this? To freeing yourself from anger, from lust, which is misplaced, from feelings like greed. If today there is an item of food that makes your mouth start to water, right, and you can't hold yourself back from dipping your fingers into it. If there's a pudding at home and you know it's there and you can't wait to get back home right now, or something's in the fridge and you can't wait to open it, you have to go and keep dipping into it, right? There's a problem that you need help with. Because it is not your body that's looking for this, it's the mind. Your body is simply a slave to the mind. So stop this slavery. We fought, you know, people back in the day, they fought to abolish slavery. But what about this slavery? And the body has to pay the price, doesn't it? The mind is the glutton, but the body has to pay the price. The mind doesn't get cholesterol. The mind doesn't get high blood pressure. The mind doesn't become diabetic. What does? The body does. See? Slavery in its modern form. This is because an untamed mind is a vice to the mind itself to begin with, and then to others around it. But a tamed mind is a virtue to itself and others around it. What the Dhamma will help you do is to see the truth. When you see the truth, you will be free from these burdens. So come all, ye who are weary and burdened, and through the Buddha's teaching I shall set you free. I can't do it by myself. You have to do your part. The Mahasangha will do their part. You know, perhaps next week there will be another Swamin Mahase here. Doesn't have to be me. I'm not looking for followers, and you shouldn't consider me the one who you are here to follow. This is just your merit power, which you will begin to understand gradually. This is not me, Swamin Mahase, coming to preach to you. This is your merit power. You earned this. You're paying for this. Is that why you leave the envelope? That's not the price I'm talking about. You're paying for this through your merits. That is because whenever you engaged in merits, you made a resolve. May by the power of these merits, I be able to understand the truth one day. So may that be a reminder, always a constant reminder at the back of your minds. Whenever you engage in a meritorious deed, however small or large it might be, as today you have become, you've resolved to dedicate a part of your lives to your salvation, I urge you, I appeal to you, and I remind you, whenever you engage in a meritorious deed, at the back of your mind, just make a small resolve. By the power of these merits, may I be freed. That's all. May I be freed. And those merits will take you closer to Nibbana, one step at a time. We will talk about anger, we will talk about lust, we will talk about desire and greed and avarice and pride, the seven sins that some religions talk about. 1,500, according to some of the Buddha's teachings. Oh, where do we start, Swami? 1,500? Well, the long and short of it is, though, it all boils down to just one thing. If you can free your mind from raga, dvesha and moha, that is the root of all evil. So that is why we attack the root. When we attack the root, the stem, the branches, the twigs, the leaves, you know, they all die. That is what this practice is about. So, once again, you know, let's go on this journey. Help me to help you. Bringing yourselves here is the first thing you can do. And secondly, from now on, you know, last week I asked you to make sure that you don't point your finger out, remember, to others and say, it is you who make me angry, you who made me sad, you who disappointed me. Now we've started to point that finger towards ourselves, right? And hopefully you caught yourself in those moments over the last week where that finger was about to point to someone and you quickly turned it back around to yourself. Good. So that is you becoming mindful. That is you becoming mindful. You know, there's a lot of talk about mindfulness, right? In every, sometimes at the workplace, at school, there's a lot of talk about mindfulness. There is a mindfulness where you are just mindful of what's going on, like breathing in, breathing out, you know, the birds are flying up in the air, there's a crow. Now, there's that kind of mindfulness, but there's another kind of mindfulness that I want you to be in, and that is mindfully aware. So it's not just mindful. You're mindful, aware that any suffering comes from within. So whenever you are suffering about something, whenever you are sad, angry, disappointed, frustrated about something, point it back in. Be aware of that and then be mindful. Whenever you see lust, whenever you see attractiveness, whenever you have sensual thoughts, first of all, be okay with that. By that, I don't mean it's fine to always be like that. But what I'm saying is, don't beat yourself up about it. Because sometimes it can happen, right? When you start listening to the sermons and you start making this progress in the path, right? You come and worship the Swaminarayanase and you say, Swaminarayanase, I want to practice the path. Thank you so much for being there and for guiding us. And then following day, you have a lustful thought. And then you feel, oh God, I've betrayed the Swaminarayanase and all this, the effort that he's making to save us. No, you don't have to be like that. Relax. Take a chill pill. Okay? Just relax. This is not an overnight transformation. This is something that we have to do gradually. I'll do my part, you do your part. The Mahasangha will do their part. The organizers here, they'll do their part. I mean, just think about it. Spare a thought for the people who organize all this for you. So all you have to do is come up, park your car there, and come up, you know, sit down and listen to the talk. But someone cleans this place up, switches on the lights, makes the place comfortable, prepares the food for you. Did you know that once you start listening to the sermon, you know, about 10-15 minutes into the talk, a few of the people from the back leave this room. You don't see them, but I do. They go to make sure that everything is okay and comfortable for you. They go set the place up, prepare the refreshments for you. Right? They just walk around, just make sure your cars are okay, you know, no one's meddling with them, right? And your stay here is as comfortable as it can be. So sometimes they don't get to listen to the sermon. See what people are prepared to do for you. Our two Anagarika Mahatthas, who drive us to this place every morning, sometimes, you know, they have to sacrifice their meditation time this morning. But they'll make sure that they collect the Swaminarayanase from the temple, get them into the car safely, and drive them here so that they're here on time for you to start the sermon. All that. You know, think about what other people are prepared to do for your salvation. For nothing else, for your salvation. All this. And it's for one reason and one reason alone. They've all walked this path. So therefore they understand and they realize that this is a sacrifice that's worth making. So once they realize that, now they're prepared to do it on behalf of everyone. The technology that we use to put this all onto the internet, several of you requested, because right at the beginning we didn't put them online, right? But several of you came and requested, Swaminarayanase, please can we have these sermons online, because I only get to come every other week. To put it online, you think it's a very simple thing. No, it's not. It has to be recorded. It has to be edited. Right? It has to be uploaded. Right? This is about two to two and a half hour long sermon. So using whatever facilities we have at the monastery. Facilities that were donated, because, you know, those days I used to have a job and I could earn. If I still could earn, I would do all of this by myself, but I can't now. But it is people who are generous because they feel that generosity. They feel that gratefulness towards others. Someone did for them and therefore now they're doing for somebody else. That is the way the sasana works. When you benefit, and someone helps you to move along, you create the environment for someone else to take your place and you move on to the next step. That is the way it works. So people who have walked this path before you, they have experienced the satisfaction that the Dhamma brings them, the freedom from suffering that the Dhamma brings them, and they have donated some of the equipment that we use, so that you get to watch the sermon online, even if you don't get to come here on a Sunday. There's so much that happens behind the scenes. And all they expect of you is just one thing: your salvation. Appamadena sampadeta. See, if you are coming to our monastery one day, and I think you're planning for it, because there's the dakineyo, the almsgiving that you've been organizing, 18th or 19th, I think. 19th, Saturday. So you're all welcome. When you come there, see if you can spot anyone's name on any of the things that have been offered at the monastery. There's no one's name there. Not on the Dhamma hall, not in the chairs, not on anything. Because no one offers it to promote themselves. They're all done out of gratitude for the sasana, because the sasana has done for them, and now they want others to benefit from it. That is the way this works. That is the ecosystem through which the sasana flourishes. So, long and short of all this, appamadena sampadeta, bring yourselves here and make use of everything that is available to you. So don't be ashamed to have that sandwich in the afternoon. Consume it, take it happily. Take as much of it as you need. Because people do it wholeheartedly, they want you to do it. They want you to have it. They offer it to you with both arms because they are happy for you to have it, because you have raised your hand up and said, I want to do the sasana. I want to free myself from suffering and take myself to salvation. You make that utterance and people are prepared to help you on this path. That is why we are here. So there we go. Appamadena sampadeta. Right, let us transfer the merits for today and we'll continue our conversation next week. Alright, first and foremost then, let us remind ourselves how incredibly fortunate we are to be in receipt of the Lord Buddha's teaching, and with immense gratitude to the bhikkhus and bhikkhunis, upasakas and upasikas, who have since time immemorial protected and preserved the sublime teachings of the Buddha and passed it down through the generations of the noble lineage in the form of the Tripitaka, which is thankfully available to us today to study, understand and comprehend the Dhamma. Let us transfer these merits to all of them. Let us also transfer these merits to the members of the Mahasangha present throughout the world, including the chief prelates of all of the chapters, who have dedicated their lives to the noble path and have committed themselves towards the betterment of all sentient beings. Let us also take a moment to remind ourselves to be grateful to all the monks and nuns resident in your local temples and nunneries who have always been by your side through thick and thin, come rain or shine. Let us also transfer these merits to my teacher, Guru Swami Mahanse, as well as all the monks resident of the monastery and the Anagarika and Anagarikas communities attached to the monastery. Let us also take a moment to transfer these merits to those who make great efforts to disseminate the teachings of the Buddha, be that by translating these sermons, sharing them out with others, or inviting others to join them, and may by the power of these merits, if any of them have been born in the woeful plains, they redeem themselves and be born in the blissful plain. May they abstain from the unmeritorious deeds, fulfill the meritorious deeds, fulfill the noble eightfold path, and may they all attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Let us also take a moment to transfer these merits to our mothers and fathers, husbands and wives, brothers and sisters, sons and daughters, grandparents, uncles, aunts, cousins, nephews and nieces, our friends, our acquaintances, our teachers, our elders, our employers, our employees, and to all those who have helped us, supported us and assisted us in any way, shape or form possible and available to them. May by the power of these merits they be healed of any physical and mental ailments and overcome any obstacles to their spiritual progress. May they abstain from the unmeritorious deeds, fulfill the meritorious deeds, fulfill the noble eightfold path, and may they all attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Let us also take a moment to transfer these merits to the devas and brahmas, spirits and demons, primarily the Sakadeva, as well as all the numerous gods and deities who have committed themselves to protect and fulfill the Sambuddha Sasana. Let us transfer this merit to our guardian deities who keep a watchful eye over us and keep us out of harm's way. And by the power of these merits, they will prosper in divine power and wisdom. May they abstain from the unmeritorious deeds, fulfill the meritorious deeds, fulfill the Noble Eightfold Path, and may they all attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Let us also take a moment to transfer this merit to those who sacrifice their lives to protect the peace and harmony of our nation, to those who lead our country, to those who protect our country, to the members of the armed forces as well as the police force. Let us also take a moment to transfer these merits to those who lost their lives in the wars, be they friend or foe. May they all rejoice in these merits. Let us also transfer merits to those who lost their lives in natural disasters and calamities such as the tsunamis, landslides, forest fires, blizzards, pandemics, and so on. May they all rejoice in the merits that we have all acquired today, reminding ourselves that in this infinitely long journey of samsara, they will all have been mothers and fathers to us, brothers and sisters, friends, acquaintances, and so on. May they all rejoice in these merits, and by the power of these merits, they, if any of them have been born in the woeful planes, they redeem themselves and be born in the blissful plane. May they abstain from the unmeritorious deeds, fulfill the meritorious deeds, fulfill the Noble Eightfold Path, and may they all attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. And by the power and blessings of all the merits we have acquired throughout the day, may we be able to witness the advent of many hundreds of thousands of arahants on this blessed land. And finally, may you and I, and everyone whose help make this program a success, become an arahat unvahanse, an arahat theranin unvahanse, in this very life itself and in the eva of the Gautama Supreme Buddha itself. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. And the blessings of the Noble Triple Gem be with you all. Members of the Mahasangha will now transfer their blessings to you. Raga jinnin nidatnva desha jinnin nidatnva moha jinnin nidatnva nibbana parama sukhayan sukhita taravatma nibbana parama sukhayan sukhita taravatma mama dasya loka siyaro satmayo nibbana parama sukhayan sukhita taravatma nibbana parama sukhayan sukhita taravatma nibbana parama sukhayan sukhita taravatma raga gini niveva desha gini niveva moha gini niveva nivansat labeva nivansat labeva nivansat labeva tungvange suvisi ananta maha guna balin sila loka sila sattvayoma nibbana parama sukhen sukhita taravetva sadhu sadhu sadhu. Just to inform you, ladies and gentlemen, there may be those among you in the audience who might have specific questions that you want answers to tackle with some problems in life. Maybe anger, lust, fear, grievance, etc. At the monastery, we have a counseling program. So these are private sessions that you can pre-arrange with one of our monks, and they're You can request for them either in Sinhalese, Tamil, English, German, for now, In the future, we are going to keep adding more languages. So you can request for that service from them, and they are more than happy to help you tackle some of these problems in your life through the Dhamma and to seek your salvation. So we are doing whatever we can to help you do appamadena sampadeta, but you need to do your part. So the shop is open. You have to walk in though, because we can't call you, come, 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 there's a sale. We can't do that. The Buddha has advised us not to do that. In the Buddha's words himself, don't go behind people giving them the Dhamma. Talk to them if they're interested, because this is not something that is worth going behind and giving, because this is the most sublime and the most pristine thing ever. So the offer is there for all of you. Just book yourself in for one of those sessions, and you can carry on until you feel that you are free from any of those issues. You can either do it in person at the monastery, or there is also an online service. You can make a request by contacting the monastery. If you want the contact details, you can speak to one of our Anagarika Mahatmyas, and they'll be more than happy to provide you that information. Oh, and you can also speak to our Anagarika Mahatmyas. So perhaps there are women, ladies here, maybe young women, young ladies, who have certain problems that they wish to speak to a lady. So we have the Anagarika Mahatmyas who offer the same service. And so it's all there for the taking. If you want it, you can come and have it. That was something.